May I speak in the name of God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Please take a seat. So firstly, can you hear me at the back? You can? Good. It's pretty difficult trying to get a serious speech and shout at the same time.
A bit of feedback.
Well, already, I haven't started. Got a bit of rumbling at the back. Okay, let's try that. I'll try and speak quite loudly. So, I was driving down the road the other day behind a tractor, and the tractor driver kept waving his arms up in the air, and he was shouting out, "The end is nigh! The end is nigh!" I mentioned it later to Julie. She said, "Oh yeah, that's going to be Farmageddon." It's all part of the sermon, come on. Now, I sometimes feel that we have a bit of an issue in mainline churches with talking about what's called eschatology. That's the part of theology which is concerned with death, judgment, and the final destiny of the soul and of humankind. And because we don't know when it will happen or what will actually happen, I suspect that we're more likely to resort to humour to cover our unease than discuss it seriously. I mean, I heard the other day that apparently the Pope, Xi Jinping, and Donald Trump were summoned by God. And God said to them, "I've finally revealed myself to you because the world is going to end in 20 years. And I need you all to go back to your people and prepare them." So the Pope went back and he called a great mass in St. Peter's Square. And he said to them all, "Dear Catholics," he said, "I've got good news and bad news. Rejoice, for God is real. But repent, because the end of the world is coming in 20 years' time." Xi Jinping held a speech in front of the full assembly of the Chinese Communist Party. "Horrible news, comrades. Not only is God real, but also the end of the world is in 20 years' time." Donald Trump tweeted, "Great news, everyone. God knows I'm important." Yeah. The final judgment is not an easy topic of conversation. And we probably feel more comfortable avoiding the subject, except, of course, at funerals where you don't really have much choice. And instead, we talk more about living Christ-like lives and where God is in our everyday existence. And we leave the end time stuff to our more evangelical and conservative brothers and sisters. But it's not always been like that. The wedding service in the old Book of Common Prayer used to ask, "I require and charge you both, as ye will answer in the dreadful day of judgment, when the secrets of the heart shall be disclosed, that if either of you knows any impediment," etc., etc. Because our predecessors had a very healthy sense of divine retribution. And that's shown by the fact that the updated version now says, "I require and charge you both as you hope for joy and peace in the marriage state." Here we are, slightly different, very dramatic change. And one that actually now suggests that we are more at home in the world than ever before. And indeed, probably therefore, so much less interested in the world to come. Now, of course, that's a view that might change as we get a bit older and potentially closer. And this change of focus could be a reaction against many of the old ideas, where the hope of future reward and punishment too often encourage the turning of a blind eye to abuse or injustice. And it even diminished the desire of Christians to actually try and do anything about it. We know only too well how the church has been seriously damaged by previous failures to recognise or act, and has had to apologise for behaviours that were deliberately overlooked or covered up. But back to judgment. I'm sure that everyone here has their own view on what will happen and whether we will be held accountable for our actions. I don't know, maybe it's our upbringing, or just the simple sort of dichotomy between good and evil, between heaven and hell. Maybe we're trusting in an all-forgiving God to wipe the slate clean. So with that in mind, our reading from Matthew 13 today should give us a short opportunity to pause and maybe reflect on why Jesus is so keen to press this notion of judgment that he refers to in verses 40 to 43. If you remember, just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so will it be at the end of the age, etc., etc. The idea of judgment and risk and reward is, if we're to follow Jesus' argument, a very, very vivid way of highlighting that what we do today really matters. And not only in this world, but in the world to come. Jesus says, let anyone with ears listen. But is it already too late? Societies and cultures across the world are changing. I hesitate to say developing, because I think some are going backwards. But they're changing at a faster rate than at any other time in our history. On the plus side, freedom, availability of choice, access to information has opened up huge opportunities for so many. But on the downside, the social media promoted culture of you're worth it has become increasingly prevalent across Western culture and has definitely encouraged a tendency to assign less and less responsibility to ourselves as individuals and moral agents. The concept of personal responsibility is something that many now find hard to accept, viewing it merely as a cultural construct that doesn't apply to them. Getting away with it all too often justifies the means. And if caught, the sense of injustice and indignation is not about what's been done, but about the fact that they were caught. And therefore, the apologies are rarely genuine and there's little or no remorse. Bit like very small children caught in the act, the first reaction is to deny it all. Then they reapportion blame to someone else. And then they profess their innocence still, until proven innocent otherwise. Now last week we all heard the better known sowing parable where the farmer spreads the seeds lavishly across four types of soil. I don't intend to go over that one again, but I do want to make the point that today's parable, also about seeds, is probably more complex and touches on many more theological concepts. First of all, Matthew's gospel is not just the good news of Jesus. It is also a political document. The kingdom of heaven that he refers to is a delineation between the realm of God's kingdom and the kingdom of the Roman emperor on earth. Jesus' coming to earth represents the inbreaking of God's kingdom on earth, and the writer is advocating an alternative understanding of the world. And it's clear that what is proposed would be against both political and religious leadership of the time. New Testament scholar Warren Carter, who I read recently, argues the divisive impact of God's empire is central to Matthew in chapter 13. And he says it's divisive in the sense that it's asking one to choose a clear alliance between God and the emperor, between good and evil. And that choice is inherent in this parable. The parable itself talks to good and evil. But the establishment of such black and white dichotomies is very dangerous and can have implications. When we reduce our worldview to such sharp contrasts, there's a real danger of losing the ability to see any middle ground, any collective best interest or common goals. If you think of our own political system, or the Western political system, there's a very partisan environment. It's conservative against Labour, it's Republican against Democrat. And such distinctions often just overshadow any shared desire to identify a common good for everybody. And more often than not, the result is a conflict, or an impasse where all the effort is in self-promotion or just criticising the opposition. Okay, but that's not unique to contemporary society. Jesus was talking to an environment where the rich were getting increasingly richer and the poor progressively poorer. And if you think about it, that's a fine line between good and evil. And Jesus addresses that situation through the metaphor, let both of them grow together until the harvest, at which point he says the wheat will be separated and destroyed and the good wheat will be harvested. But let's not make the mistake. He's not saying that we can therefore split our world into those two categories, good and evil, believers, non-believers, because that would be even more dangerous. And it wouldn't be helpful. Jesus' message is that we are all in the world together and we need to work and grow together, like it or not. We need each other to survive. In Romans 14, Paul describes God's kingdom as righteous peace and joy. So one could argue, why does God allow evil in the world in the first place? Or the other old question, why does God allow bad things to happen? Well, before you start panicking, both those questions do merit a much broader theological discussion than we've got time for. But in brief, they do hint that there is a desire, when things go wrong, for God's direct intervention or even a level of preordination of events. But we've talked before about the fact that God has given humanity free will. And would we really be prepared to sacrifice that for a God that is so hands-on that every thought or action that we did was immediately judged, weighed on the scales of holiness, with a reward or punishment being meted out instantly? We can't have it both ways. So let's face it, God will not stop us from making good or bad choices. But with more freedom of choice or action, the lines between these good and evil decisions have become blurred. And if we're honest, we all acknowledge that at some point, well, actually, we just acknowledge that we all have the propensity for both good and bad inside us. And we also know that at some point we have probably made decisions that may have had an adverse effect on others. As I said, the parable is not black and white, and you could argue that Jesus' presentation of two antithetical types of plants presents a view of humanity that's not, well, it's not really as we understand it. Our own experience tells us that we are likely to make different choices based on circumstances or opportunity. And of course, any attempt then to justify our actions by using categorisations such as Christian or non-Christian, good or bad, righteous or wrong, is simply a self-delusion. And it actually confirms the point I was trying to make earlier about the lack of personal accountability in this. At best, such definitions, such categorisations are fluid, coexistent and difficult to discern. None of us fits into a neatly specific and binding category, unless that be simply human. So the primary problem, as detailed in today's parable, is that the weeds and the wheat coexist too closely to be dealt with separately. And the same is true of our world today. But there is an ambiguity between good and evil, especially if we are the ones that decide the parameters. If you think about it, seemingly good acts, but done in the bad spirit, can have very poor consequences for us. A missile targeted at an enemy, but without consideration as to whether it would kill innocent civilians. Or a donation that's given, not in cheerfulness or gratitude or graciousness, but simply to get a bigger tax deduction. But there you are. I'm already starting to be judgmental. And when we start to judge others, the consequences can be dangerous. Who are we to judge? Even with access to lots of information, judgment calls can often prove flawed. It's simply not easy to tell the weeds from the wheat. And then Jesus makes a really crucial point, is that we can't tell who is in and who is out. But what he does say is, we should leave that judgment to God. And as we see in other parts of the gospel, God's interpretation of that judgment may not be what we expect. So, just in summing up, the Bible's expectation of a last judgment should at least make us think about the importance of our choices and actions in our everyday lives. Maybe divine judgment could be the antidote for sentimentalism, cheap grace, or a lack of personal responsibility. All those things that conspire to wither our own moral responsibility. And if we think this doesn't apply to us, that we've done enough, that we're doing okay, then maybe that's the time to start worrying. Because nobody knows when that day will come. In Hamlet's Act 2, Scene 2, Hamlet urges Rosencrantz, "What's the news?" And Rosencrantz replies, "None, my lord, but the world has grown honest." And Hamlet, in his true depressive style, says, "Then is doomsday near." Just one last thought. Are we taking a gamble? Are we deceiving ourselves into taking a big risk? What are we going to do if it turns out that our all-forgiving God is something other than an amiable chap who looks the other way no matter what?